This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com. So here's a banter bit that I've been waiting to do for a while. It kept on getting bumped, but now it seems like the perfect time. Last month, I think it was, I read a post on org theory by Fabio Rojas about elitism and sociology. Fabio, would you mind if I read it, or would you like the honors?
Why don't you read it, because your voice is nicer than mine.
Oh, you're too kind. All right. And the post says, over the years, commenters have asked, why focus on the most elite programs in academia? The answer is simple. Students and faculty in elite programs get disproportional attention, rewards, and influence. Is that fair? No, I definitely think that we can be more equitable. But as an empirical matter, academia is a superstar market, and I have to deal with that. For example, when it comes to gender and racial diversity, I always tell people that the action happens around elite programs. Why? Graduates of elite programs are most likely to stay in academia, get good academic jobs, and continue publishing. A lot of programs will simply not hire people below a certain PhD rank, at least not until they amass a massive academic record to, quote, compensate, unquote, for their PhD program. I have no animus against people with non-elite backgrounds, and I do think we need to help scholars across the academy, but if you want your local university to have a more diverse faculty, you'll have the best shot by focusing your efforts on the fancier programs. Just saying. So that's the post, and my question that I have is, does the discipline obsess over elite programs? Is it warranted? Is it helpful? Or does it hurt the discipline?
One of my favorite sayings about sociologists is that they tell you how unfair labor markets are, and then they show you.
Yeah, exactly.
So do we do it too much? It's unclear. So, for example, you could ask the question, is it a normatively, you could, so empirically, this is clearly true. You'll see statistics like, you know, like top 10 programs, you know, their PhD, the PhDs that produce their faculty are highly concentrated. You know, some programs have never hired a PhD below a certain rank of program and so forth. So empirically, the focus on elites is there. You just have to deal with it. Empirically, you could ask the question whether that's justified. So, for example, you could say maybe it's a good thing that we focus on elites because there's a self-selection, right? You know, the students who go to the most elite programs like Michigan or Princeton or Harvard or Stanford or something, or Wisconsin, you know, they're more likely to be the strongest students. So don't be surprised if they produce the best work and have the best career outcomes. Or you could be a big believer that, you know, that's just kind of a status game where, you know, that's less correlated with some underlying value. But for a lot of issues, that's really not germane, right? So even if you believe in the self-selection issue, you certainly must believe that the correlation is not perfect. You know, there are certainly good people who go to a more modest school, and you certainly want to reward them for doing good work. You know, shouldn't all be at the top? So then when it comes to questions of how to manage the academy, right? Like, how do we run our business? You know, are we doing it fairly or unfairly? You know, these empirical questions become important. And then you have to ask, if you care about an issue, what's the easiest way to solve it? So for example, in the blog post, I talk about racial and gender diversity. People say, well, if you look at the, strong programs, they're disproportionately, too many whites, maybe a disproportionately low number of African Americans, Latinos. How do you address that? How do you fix that? There are many ways you could do it. So for example, you could say, take all Latino students and give them extra mentoring or training and whatnot. Or you could say, well, look at the Latinos or African Americans who are elite programs and help them out the most, or figure out what it is about the elite programs that they are not giving to students of color or women and focus on that. And if you care about efficiency in terms of your policy, that's the way to go. You would say, okay, where is the place? If you really care about diversity, and you know that most of the best jobs are going to people from certain strata of programs, then you could go for the lower ranked programs, but you kind of know that that's going to be a very low reward effort. Or you could focus on the most elite programs where, you know, a priori, those people are very likely to make it through the job application process. And as I wrote in my post, it doesn't mean that I don't think good people are found all over the place or whatnot, but you have to choose your battles. You know, their time budgets, their money budgets, their constraints to human action. And if you really care about racial diversity, what it means is that, you know, you should really focus on making sure students of color in the top programs at the top couple of schools, that they're more likely to survive. And one of my points is not just survive, but to make vital connections with senior faculty who are often producing the co-authoring opportunities that lead to the best jobs. Because it's,
okay, so,
yeah, go ahead, Leslie, please.
So I have 2 points. So the first is, you know, I mean, we definitely see it in sociology, but I mean, I think that it's something that's part of academia more broadly. Yep. I mean, I remember being when I was a graduate student, I was on graduate student government, and I remember having a meeting with the then president of Princeton, Shirley Tillman. And I remember her saying, well, you know, we were talking about diversifying faculty. And you might have someone who does some really interesting work at like this institution, but if no one's ever heard of it, I'm sorry, it's just that person's just not going to get hired. So I kind of feel as though sociology departments are taking cues from the administration of whatever institution they're within more broadly and saying, hey, our deans will be more likely to support this candidate if he or she like has this certain pedigree. That's number one. And my second point is that, you know, while it might be great to focus on students of color, in particular at elite programs, I want to push back a little bit because sure. It has not been my personal experience that because you're a student of color, that or graduate student of color, that faculty decide that they have a commitment to mentoring you in the way that I kind of feel like I hear you're saying this mentorship is happening.
So let me clarify that point. So first of all, I actually agree with you, and that's why I want to clarify the point, which is the point that I was trying to make is that, you know, the recipe for success in academia is difficult, but fairly clear. You want to go to a school with a good reputation, ideally a top 5 school, but usually most faculty actually come from maybe the top 20 or 30 programs in their discipline. But on top of that, you need the right publication. And often these publications are mentored or assisted by faculty. And you'd be surprised if you look at R1 programs or very selective liberal arts colleges, you see a lot of junior faculty with co-authors who are faculty members. But one of my issues, I've actually written about this on the blog, is that those opportunities are not going to students of color. So if your experience is that you weren't getting that help, I would humbly suggest that you're not alone. You know, a lot of people in your position have certainly felt that way. And so, you know, so that makes me think, you know, like, what is the issue? And my judgment, having now been through the entire academic ladder, like I've gone from grad school to full professor, is that, you know, success is really about the core of the publishing faculty at top programs extending opportunities for publication to students. That is, yeah, there are a couple of lone geniuses who can go out there and just publish in the top journals. They do exist. They'll be fine. But 9 times out of 10, you will see, you know, the top junior faculty with a nice with a couple of good publications, even if it's not a top journal, but like some sort of reasonable publication with the faculty. And so my opinion now is that one of the reasons that we see an underrepresentation, not just in sociology, but in most disciplines, is that it's not enough to get Black students or Latino students into the graduate programs. That's simply not enough. We know that. We have 30 years of data. We now know that's enough. What it is once you walk into the door, you need a senior faculty member to say, can you work on my research project? Can you co-author this? And I will say bluntly, that did not happen to me. I have zero co-authored publications from my graduate school faculty. Not that they were horrible people or anything. I'm not implying that. But as a fact, that's what happened. And I've noticed that a lot of students of color, when they are successful, are often solo authors on stuff. So what that means is there's going to be a relative underproduction. And for some reason, those opportunities are not being extended throughout the graduate cohort. So I think I actually agree with you, Leslie, on your basic point. And my point was simply that it's not that everybody gets these opportunities, but the people who tend to succeed have a lot of these opportunities. That was my point.
Can I push back on this a little bit? Because from my perspective, I felt like it has there is a narrow view of the profession underlying sort of the general commentary. And if you go to the top 10 schools, or if you're talking about elite jobs, what are we talking about? We're talking about a universe of maybe a dozen lightly read publications, NSF grant making, and the quest for faculty positions. Maybe there's 150, 200 at 10 institutions. And this is occurring in a broader field where there's probably tens of thousands of people who think that they're sociologists and work in some capacity as a sociologist. And one of my concerns is when we sort of narrow our conception of what the discipline does, where things matter to those 10 journals, those 10 schools, and NSF grant making, we're not only sort of cutting off young people from considering other really viable and probably equally high impact lines of work. Like if your student goes and works at the Census Bureau, ultimately their net impact on society by virtue of their research is probably comparable or probably greater than what you would get from a run-of-the-mill sociologist, right? We all individually have, in my perception, is quite a minor impact on the general conversation. We pop through once in a while in the newspaper for a few weeks, each of us does, a few times in our career. But that maybe when we're focusing on sort of this narrow range, we're reinforcing a system where I think we're reinforcing maybe a disciplinary culture where we're not pushing our students towards other forms of work. We're not valorizing other types of thought or discussion that takes place on other venues.
Can you define narrow range?
A narrow range would be, it's what I would think of as research that would get published in the top journals and major grants, NSF or something like that.
Yeah. So let me respond by saying that, you know, whenever you make any choice about how you run an institution, like graduate programs, you have to always ask yourself, what is the goal? So in that original blog post, I picked on the issue of, you know, diversifying the faculty, right? And academia has a very, you're correct. The academia has a very narrow definition of quality. It's one that I kind of agree with, may not completely, but I'm kind of in line with it. You know, I think journals are valuable. I think books are valuable and academic research is valuable. However, if you say I have more than one goal or I have different goals, then of course the policy is going to shift. Right. So, for example, if you really want to diversify the faculty, I think my suggestion is not a crazy one, that you have to really talk to the incumbent faculty members and ask them, why aren't there more Black co-authors, Black research assistants on your projects? However, if the issue is you just want to produce high quality researchers, they'll go to the private sector, that will go to, you know, the U.S. Census, which you mentioned, which is a great line of work to be in. Then the policy will shift. So for example, if the goal of your graduate program hypothetically is to train people for the Census Bureau, then publication is really a moot point. And then it might be just a simple matter of fact of immersion in basic applied statistics. And in fact, one of the nice things about the program where I teach at now, Indiana University, is that we have had people go to the Census Bureau and they've been very much helped by this really a relentless focus on basic applied stats that we have at Indiana. And it's just a different thing. And you just have, at the beginning of every conversation, you have to just say, what's the goal? And right. That helps you clarify. And then you're right. If the goal is working at Facebook, working at the census, working mm-hmm. for the school district, doing policy reports, then of course the training is going to change and the goals are going to change. And I'll even tell individual students this, like if you want a job like Fabio's job, then yeah, you're gonna have to slog through this for 5, 6, 7 years and get the pubs. But if you want to go work for an NGO, you should quit tomorrow, Like, just get your master's degree, quit tomorrow, wrap it up. I'm a big believer in completing things. So complete your master's degree, but that takes like a couple of months, not years. And then goodbye, go to DC or San Francisco and pursue that line of work. My skill set is not going to help you get a foothold in that world very well. Mm. So I think I agree with your general point that I'm speaking in a very narrow range, but I'm speaking as an academic who cares about the health of academia. I wasn't speaking from the perspective of, you know, shifting the goals of my department or some other department.
Well said.
But do you think that type of approach suppresses the development of maybe a practical sociology, or pushes the ASA to maybe ignore our colleagues who work at teaching institutions? I'm thinking more in terms of a general cultural disposition, elitism in sociology. Not necessarily one that disparages our colleagues, but views the relevant universe of sociology as occurring within 20 departments and maybe, you know, 5 or 6 publishers.
Right. So I have a couple of responses to that, which is that if your issue is, say, application versus basic academic research, we already have a good solution. It's called the Public Policy School. And they provide fabulous training. They will get you those kinds of jobs. And for example, like, here's a key difference. If you work at a school of public policy, part of your packet for promotion will often include not just research, teaching, and service, but also public service. You have to show that you've done something concrete for some constituency outside of academia, and that could be flexible, but you have to do something, right? Mm-hmm. So if your question is, what about things that aren't purely academic or basic knowledge in nature? The answer is, we already have that. Okay. Then if your question is, how can we make the ASA or whatever professional sociology is more friendly to a wider range of people in different kinds of academic positions, you know, I think there's not one strategy, right? So one, you know, you could do one thing, like you could have publications that focus on those people. For example, we have Teaching Sociology, that's an ASA journal. We have Contexts. Even this podcast is a really great example of that, which is like, we're going to talk in this conversation and with your other guests on other programs. Mm-hmm. They will talk about stuff that's very accessible that you could show an undergraduate and would make for an excellent classroom discussion, right? Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But if you're talking about things like leadership, who gets to write the high impact stuff, mm-hmm. who gets to direct the nature of science and the scholarly enterprise, not always, but disproportionately, that is an elite game. Mm-hmm. And it's like going into the NFL and saying, I wish we'd stop talking about Tom Brady. The answer is, you're going to talk about Tom Brady because he's the best at what he does. And the teams you should talk about are the top 5 or 10 teams. They set the agenda in pro sports. Go ahead, please.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there. All right. So wait, but then I have, but then, okay, last question I'll ask.
Sure.
Do you think then that there are ethical issues if a sociology doctoral program accepts students and they don't have a high tenure track placement rate? Should they just be sending students to public policy schools if they can't put their grad students on the tenure track?
I don't think it's an ethical issue. I think what each department has to do, because really nothing is written in stone, right? The people who staff that program, they have to have a conscious choice about what they're going to do. And then if they're upfront and honest about it, that is ethical. So let me give you an example, a real world example. There are many programs in this country in sociology that do not offer PhD degrees. Instead, they offer master's degrees, right? And the classic question that comes up in these programs is, should we be training our students for PhD programs? Should this be a stepping stone program from the master's level to the doctoral level? Or alternatively, is this a stepping stone to industry or to the public sector world of work? And if you tell people upfront what you're trying to do, then that is completely ethical. It is completely ethical to say, look, sociology is a wonderful academic tradition. There's a lot of excellent things that happen in it. You can get a decent job in policy if you learn some basic stats, you read some social theory, you read some demography, experimental design, or whatever. And that's the package we're giving you, because that package is tailored towards the career goals we're trying, Now, of course, if you want to do academia, we can help you too, but that's not the number one goal of our program. And same thing with doctoral programs. Like, who says you can't have a doctoral program that's more applied in flavor, long as you are open about it? You know, same thing with academia. You know, if you have an academically oriented PhD program, there's nothing wrong with that, long as you're open about it. And I think this really speaks to the issue that many academic programs, which is they often don't have an internal culture of debate where they talk about what really the goal of the program is. Instead, you get hired there, you close the door to your office and you do your research and you hope for tenure. But instead, you know, departments should really be open. And every couple of years at their review or internal assessment, they should say, look, you know, what are we really trying to do here? And it's okay to switch missions. But, you know, develop that idea of what you're doing and tell people up front, like, this is a department about public policy, or this is a department about academic research. And then that's ethical. That's fine with me.
Yeah. And, you know, just to follow up again on this sort of this idea about the sort of focus on elite institutions. I mean, that our country seems to be obsessed with elite institutions, right? Right. So why wouldn't sociology as a discipline also be totally obsessed by elite institutions? I mean, hey, we could use that as a segue into, you know, the whole Harvard lawsuit, if you'd like, right? This fetishization of this one institution.
We're not that kind of show. We use guitar riffs to separate segments. Stick to the format.
Is that
the format works.
Yeah. For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.